Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back into Sports Time. Bryant and Darian with you as we start our second hour on this Monday afternoon. We've got to talk some college football and college basketball. And joining us now to do all that, like he does every single Monday afternoon, it's David Cobb.
Joining Bryant and Brett now on Sports Time is national college football writer for CBS Sports, Memphis native and Tennessee grad, who you can find on Twitter X at David W. Cobb. It's David Cobb.
David Cobb joins us now from CBS Sports, where he covers college football and college basketball. A lot to get to this afternoon, David, but I want to start with the NFL draft. Were you as surprised as it seemed like a lot of people were to see the fall for Jamaad McCoy? I know there was a lot of talk leading up to the draft of obviously coming off this injury. I kept hearing leading up to the draft, first round talent, but probably won't go until the second round, then ultimately drops all the way to the top pick in the fourth round. What did you make of that fall, and kind of walk us through the situation that McCoy is facing?
Well, it seems to happen every year that consensus develops around certain players that the injury concerns are too great to justify spending an early first round pick. But, I mean, I think in the fourth, what a tremendous value. Because at that point, the hit rate on prospects is tepid at best. And so I think a really good gamble to get a guy of his talent at that point in the draft. But obviously the injury, I mean, it's a serious deal. It kept him out all of last season. And, you know, then you're thinking, all right, well, at that position, the explosivity, the 40 time, the ability to cut and pivot and move quickly, vertical jump, like all those things that are so closely tied to your athleticism, honestly, are in question. So I get it. Like, I get why he slipped, but at the same time, like with any position in sports, there's more to it than just those things. And I think Jamaad McCoy has all the intangibles. So if he can get back close athletically to where he was, then, like, yeah, I could see that guy holding down a corner position in the NFL for a long time. I mean, had he been healthy this past season, he was viewed as like an all-American type of player. And Tennessee's defense slipped a little bit for a number of reasons this past season, but one of them being they didn't have that guy out there, and their defense in many ways was sort of predicated on, you know, a shutdown corner being able to direct opposing offenses in other directions. And when you don't have that, kind of like in basketball, if you don't have your lockdown perimeter defender available to stick on the opponent's best playmaker, then, you know, your whole defense suffers. And he's that. If he's healthy, he's that guy. Like, he's a guy who you can build a secondary around. So I don't know. I guess the thought is he might not ever regain the form that allows him to be that caliber of player in the NFL. And it's just, you know, it's a shame for him because obviously the talent is there, but when you're not able to go out there and show it, it really, I think, makes it difficult to justify spending an early round draft pick on a guy like that. And there were a lot of good defensive backs left on the board after the first night of that draft. I mean, you know, you look, there were five or six guys who were rated as like top 20 talent still on the board after night one, and a handful of them were DBs. So it also felt like that NFL franchises just weren't prioritizing the defensive backfield early in this draft like maybe you would see in past years. I mean, I believe it was 19 of the 32 first-round picks were offensive players. And so, in a way, Jamaad McCoy was also the victim of just an early-round surge of offensive picks.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Speaking of offensive picks, the quarterback position, the two kind of surprises of the draft, what was the, Ty Simpson going number 13 overall in the draft, but then on the complete other end of that spectrum, Garrett Nussmeier going number 249th overall in the seventh round. What did you make of Ty going so early and Garrett Nussmeier going so late?
Well, I actually think on the surface there's some similarities between the two of those guys. They're both sons of coaches, and they're both just these sort of happy-feeted guys in the pocket. Like, you think back to when Ty Simpson got in trouble last year. He was just uncomfortable in the pocket. He would throw off platform, throw off of one foot. Garrett Nussmeier was, like, the worst about that at LSU. Didn't have great offensive line play for most of his time there, and just got into situations where it felt like they had to play hero ball. And honestly, that was the case for Alabama, too, because Alabama couldn't run the ball last year. Ryan Williams wasn't nearly the player we thought he was going to be. And so you just saw situations where Ty Simpson was just so – it looked uncomfortable. And it's just kind of the same way for Garrett Nussmeier. And so I actually think if plugged into the right system, Garrett Nussmeier could be a total steal. Now, what's his pathway to playing time realistically? That's probably a long road. But, you know, when we look up in a few months and we're doing winners and losers of the preseason, you know, I think he's somebody that's going to make an NFL roster because – he's got a lot of talent. He's just it's sad to say for a guy who's played as much football as he has, but he just needs to be refined. But I think that could happen if he's in a system where they actually sort of develop him and put the framework around him to where he is more comfortable in the pocket. He is getting through his progressions a little faster, and hey, maybe they'll have a running game, right? So I mean, that could be, you know, who knows where he'll end up at the, you know, at that juncture in the draft. Oh, he could play for a number of franchises over the course of his career, but if he gets in a place with like some decent framework around him, I actually think he could do okay, because it never felt like he had the support that he needed to maximize his potential at LSU, and he was following in the footsteps of Jaden Daniels, who really could do it all. He could do it all on his own, and then when you're a guy who can't do it all on his own, it seems like you're getting exposed. Well, I think more so than anything, what was exposed about LSU was that like they had deficiencies elsewhere. And oh no, now we don't have a quarterback who can make up for all of that on his own. And so, yeah, I think Garrett Nussmeier was way, you know, more deserving of going higher. And I don't think there's that big of a difference between him and Ty Simpson. I think the allure with Ty Simpson is, oh, we only saw one season of him. You know, and these NFL GMs and coaches, they talk themselves into thinking, oh, well, I can extract the best out of him. And, you know, his sample size is so small that if we tweak and refine, oh, we could turn him into a Pro Bowler, right? And then it's on the other end with Garrett Nussmeier. I mean, we'd seen over three seasons of him playing football, and it was underwhelming. And so I don't think the gap between those two players is nearly as large, though, as what their positions in the draft would suggest.
David, I had Garrett pretty high on my board, but I won't cry for him because I think he's going to make a lot of money backing up Mr. Mahomes in Kansas City over the next few years. But I want to keep you locked into SEC quarterbacks. So the decent news for Diego Pavia is that he's accepted an invite to the Ravens minicamp. But could you tell us and our listeners, how did the Vandy quarterback become the first Heisman finalist to go undrafted since 2014?
He's 5'9" and he doesn't have a cannon of an arm, and he's not really that fast. I mean, he ran the ball. I mean, you look at the tools for Diego Pavia, they don't really exist. They don't really exist. There really aren't tools there. It is a gritty, like lower the shoulder, like Tim Tebow light almost is how I would describe him. Not 6'3", not 240 pounds. I mean, Diego Pavia is basically like the junior varsity version of Tim Tebow, and I mean, that's not an insult. I mean, as you mentioned, Darian, he was a Heisman Trophy finalist and did unbelievable things for Vanderbilt University, but there's nothing about his game that suggests he's got the NFL prototype or makeup. Honestly, I think his best trait is the things that a lot of people are hating on him for. I think it's the brashness, the overwhelming self-belief, the people have doubted me all along and I'm going to, you know, show them. And a lot of times that attitude, that makeup, it takes him too far. You know, we see the Instagram Live or whatever after the Heisman ceremony where he's cussing Indiana. You know, you see the incidents he got into back in New Mexico State. Mm-hmm. This dude's not afraid to get in your face and chirp. You have to be that way if you're a 5'9" quarterback in the SEC. And it's that brashness and that competitive nature that it's his best trait and his worst trait. And if there's any hope of him making it in the NFL and making a 53-man roster, it's because he has that overwhelming self-belief, and he'll just refuse to be denied, and he'll somehow find a way, you know. So people might want to say, well, if he was more mature, he would have gotten drafted. I think that's false. I think if Diego Pavia were more mature, I don't think he would have ever been a Heisman Trophy finalist. Mm. I think it's that naive sort of just I'm betting on myself MO that like helped him get as far as he did. So I'll be fascinated to see how it plays out. But I would be surprised, probably shocked, if Diego Pavia is actually on a 53-man roster. So I think he's more of a practice squad sort of guy. And maybe this may sound crazy right now, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if we look up in 10 years and Diego Pavia is a college football coach. I'm not saying a head coach. Don't misinterpret me. I think he could be a position coach, a you know, kind of a recruiter. He's got, I think, a lot of the intangibles, and if he can just sort of grow up a little bit, like I could see him being a coach. I don't think I can see Diego Pavia being an NFL player, though.
Well, David, I'm glad you cleared that up, because my neighbor, he's the biggest Diego Pavia fan, and he's a novice football, college football watcher. And I guess from that standpoint, people that don't watch it all the time, you hear Diego Pavia, you see Diego Pavia, and he just wanted to know, hey, what the heck is going on with him? And he's just not that big, guys. So, hey, appreciate that one.
Yeah, there was a great breakdown today on CBSSports.com by my colleague Shahan J. Raja. And he basically laid out some of the differences in the measurables. I mean, you look at Kyler Murray, Bryce Young, some of these other, Russell Wilson, some of these other shorter quarterbacks. I mean, Diego Pavia is significantly shorter than them. And then it's also the arm length. All right, so you're short. Can you get the football over the top of the offensive line? Well, if you have longer arms and a higher release point, then yes. But Diego Pavia has short arms, so that doesn't help him. And then it's okay. Well, then do you run a 4.440? Can you get out and make plays with your legs on the perimeter, get outside the pocket, and find throwing lanes outside the pocket? No, he cannot. He's not that fast. So I just don't know. He doesn't have a lot going for him. But that's always been the case. That's always been true. It's why his JUCO offer was the only one he had coming out of high school. It's why Vanderbilt was the only Power Four school that would have had any interest in him coming out of New Mexico State. But he found a way. Now this is the next level sort of barrier. And I'd be shocked if he was able to find his way past it. But hey, look, the kid's been doubted his whole life. we'll see.
Yeah, no, it's going to be an interesting story to follow. I also saw today, I think Winnipeg has his CFL rights. If it doesn't work out in Baltimore, he can go up to Canada and play for Winnipeg. So it could be fun to see what happens with him over these next couple of months. I want to get to some college basketball here in a second. But before we do that, the news earlier today, Brendan Sorsby is checking into a residential treatment program for a gambling addiction. The initial reports said that Sorsby's gambling, per a source, was a steady flurry of small bets over a period of time. And while he was a freshman at Indiana, as a true freshman redshirting, he bet on Indiana in multiple games to win said games. And obviously that is the big deal of this, betting on your own sport and your own team while playing. But honestly, how many of us haven't placed a flurry of small bets over a period of time? I mean, that is the least of my concerns. What do you make of this story with Texas Tech, their potential starting quarterback, and what that could mean for them going into next season?
Oh, yeah, it's a pretty big deal. They've invested a lot in building their roster around Brendan Sorsby, and now it feels like it's all going to come down to the results of this NCAA investigation, because we've seen the NCAA drop the hammer on players for point shaving, and I'm not saying that's what this was, because as you mentioned, Ryan, he was a insignificant player at Indiana when he bet on Indiana, but he was still a player. So it's not like he was influencing the outcomes of games, so it wasn't to the level of like a point shaving thing, obviously, but pretty clear. You're not allowed to bet on, I mean, you really shouldn't be betting on the sport you play at all, especially not on the team you play for, right? And so that's the issue here from a football perspective. Now, obviously, like you're going to school to rehab for a gambling addiction. Like there's a very personal, like health, mental, whatever issue there that he's got to work through. And I don't want to downplay that at all. Like that's obviously like very serious, but we think about it from the football perspective, and the football perspective is the Big 12 race is going to look so different if Brendan Sorsby is not the quarterback at Texas Tech. And I got to think that's on the table here because the NCAA can't let this keep happening. This can't keep happening. Guys, especially placing bets on their own sport, on their own team, no less. It's just, we're seeing the ramifications of this everywhere. You got to make an example of these cases with these details that are out now. I mean, it's a bad look, man. And it's going to be hard for the NCAA to just turn a blind eye to this. And so we could be seeing Texas Tech's 2026 plans be wrecked right now as a result of this. And I don't have the roster pulled up, so I honestly couldn't even really break it down for you, like what it looks like past him on the depth chart. But I can't imagine it's a very pretty picture. I mean, when you sink millions into one player at that position, you're not bringing him in to compete for the job.
No.
You're bringing him in to not just win the job, but to be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And typically speaking, you're not going to have tremendous depth behind those sorts of players. So,
David,
huge deal.
David, I can tell you this much at least. The backup quarterback currently on the roster at Texas Tech is Will Hammond, who missed the entire spring recovering from a torn ACL. And as of yesterday, the reports that were out there said that the thought was he would not be able to return until at least week 3 of the season. Now, today, after the story came out with Sorsby, he has started throwing, and there is optimism that he'll be healthy enough to play week 1 against Abilene Christian. So you're talking about your starting quarterback could be ineligible for gambling. Your backup quarterback could be injured and not ready to go for week 1. And on top of all of this, and something that is fascinating about this, over the last however many years, you've had the spring portal where Texas Tech could go out there and say, okay, we might not have our quarterback. Let's go out and get another quarterback just as kind of an insurance policy in case we're without our starting quarterback. Now we don't have a spring transfer portal, so they're stuck with the guys they have.
Yeah, well, isn't it amazing, too, that now all of a sudden Will Hammond's entry timeline has improved?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Oh, well, maybe we can find some new medicine and put a brace on that. And now all of a sudden he'll be ready week 1. He actually has played some football. So I forgot he was still around. Not the worst backup plan there. Cause he actually has played a little bit, but you would have thought Texas Tech would have caught wind of this or had some idea right before they basically cast their entire season's fortunes with this guy. But, yeah, man, because he was like the hottest commodity, like one of the top three quarterback transfers on the market. I mean, you think about like Byron Brown was always going to follow Alex Golesh. So, you know, in terms of like free agent quarterbacks, I mean, you had Sam Levitt coming out of Arizona State, and Brendan Sorsby was viewed as, you know, one of the top of the charts in terms of quarterback transfers. So, yeah, that's tough, man. That's tough for Texas Tech. I don't know how that's going to play out. The NCAA investigation on that is going to be – I mean, you would have thought by now that players would understand this, that every compliance office, the first thing they would do when a freshman or a transfer steps foot on campus is, hey, I don't know what you know about this. I don't know what they told you about at your last school. But when it comes to gambling, like, make them go through the whole, like, hour-long session on it. I mean, and you got to hammer this stuff home, like – you know, and I can't remember exactly what the rules are. I think you're allowed to bet on other sports, and that doesn't, you know, it's not illegal or whatever in terms of NCAA rules. But, I mean, I think it's always been pretty clear that, like, you can't bet on your sport. Like, so that's, I'm sure it's not the only time it's happened, but obviously in a case like this, it's going to have major, major ramifications. Yep.
So, David, I want to switch. I'm sorry, I want to switch gears right quick and just ask you a quick question about a former Tigers basketball player. Not sure if you've gone through this with Dakins and Stats already, but I'm speaking of Curtis Givens. For the second year in a row, a Tigers player has found himself in a power conference. What kind of recruit was Curtis Givens the third for Ohio State? As in, what role is he going to play? Is this a starting spot he's looking at? Or is he potentially looking at a role player type of position that he had here?
Nah, I think it's going to be more of a role player type of deal. I mean, they bring back John Mobley Jr., who's going to be one of the better guards in the Big Ten. I think they're pretty well set in the backcourt. So I was a little surprised to see Curtis Givens end up at Ohio State because, look, I mean, we hadn't seen, like, world-beating type of stuff from him. I think he's a good player. I think he can play at that level. But I don't think he's a power conference starter at this stage in his career. So, yeah, I think he's a depth piece. I think there's some promise there. I think he kind of fits that combo guard off the bench sort of role. He can facilitate. He can play off the ball. If he can stay healthy, I think there's some upside there still. I mean, we're talking about a former top 100 prospect who's now played a decent amount of college basketball. I was a little surprised to see Ohio State be the destination there. For one thing, it's like, all right, you think maybe, okay, he's leaving Memphis to obviously, you know, you want to get more money, whatever. But, you know, at this point, he's going into his third season of college basketball. You want to go somewhere where you're definitely going to have a bigger role, like that, you know, that you would think that would be a part of the equation there. But I don't know that Ohio State can definitely guarantee that. And he's definitely not going to be the guy because John Mobley Jr. is going to be the guy. So, good luck to him. I'd be surprised, though, if we see him put up crazy numbers for Ohio State next year.
Yeah. Last thing for you, David. The 5-for-5 rule, the NCAA released a statement earlier this afternoon saying they're advancing the age-based eligibility rules. And the big kind of note from this release is that it's not going to be retroactive. So the guys that are graduating seniors that have played four seasons, they will not be able to get another year if this goes through, which was a big issue last week. Coaches talking about it, and really there were reports out there that entire college basketball programs were kind of putting the transfer portal to a halt until they knew what was going to happen with this, if there would be the ability to go and get some of their guys back. What do you think of this proposal, and if it goes through, which it seems like it will, what that will mean for not just college basketball, but college athletics as a whole?
Well, it means the lawyers are licking their chops. Yeah. And, you know, the NCAA is going to try to implement it, as you stated, which is that guys who played 4 years who are graduating, you know, next month, right? They're going to walk, assuming they're on a graduation track. Mm-hmm. But whether they graduate or not, they played four seasons. They've expired their eligibility. Well, now the NCAA is going to say, you're going to have 5 years to play moving forward. Well, all these guys, man, they're going to be raising their hand and saying, well, what about me? What about me? And, you know, it's like the NCAA is going to say, no, this only applies to players moving forward. Well, there's a lot of lawyers out there who are going to be representing players whose eligibility is up right now, and they're going to say, well, this should apply to my client as well. And it's going to get taken to court, and the NCAA has a iffy track record in court, and we could very well see a situation where a legal injunction is granted permitting one player in one specific case the ability to go out and play as this thing is adjudicated. And what that will then mean is that there's a precedent established and that all these 5-year guys or 4-year guys who we thought had graduated or used up their eligibility this past season will be back in college basketball next year. So the NCAA can come out with this rule. I just think they might have a really hard time enforcing it because there's money on the table out there for the 5-year guys. And Bryant, there's a massive appetite among college basketball coaches who are looking at incomplete rosters right now, who are in desperate need of some of these guys to be eligible. Because if they're not eligible, they don't have anywhere to turn at this point for talent. I mean, LSU has one player committed. Mark still has holes to fill on that Kentucky roster. I mean, you could even say Penny Hardaway could benefit from this because, you know, obviously a big commitment today from Jaden Reed. But, I mean, you're still looking for a big man, right? Mm-hmm. And if the fifth-year guys are going to be eligible, then the pool of talent is better, wider, to choose from. And so why I say that is because if big time athletic departments and big time coaches are behind getting these guys eligible for next season, that means there's going to be a lot of energy, a lot of institutional resources devoted to it. They're going to make sure these guys who are trying to get eligible have the best representation possible. And some of these schools will put up a serious fight to try to get some of these players back in uniform. So the NCAA can come out with this rule and say that it only applies to players moving forward. But making that hold up in court, going to be a totally different challenge.
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be a wild offseason if and when this gets put in. Because like you said, I think the lawyers are already lined up, ready to take the NCAA to court over this. But David, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, David. David Cobb joining us from CBS Sports like he does every single week. Talk college football and college basketball. Didn't have enough time to ask him about Jaden Reed, but sounds like called it a big commitment, big get. So seems like he was happy with the addition of Jaden Reed. But I think he's right. You know, looking at this today, and we can talk more about this at 5:30 when we've got a little bit more time, but the Division I Board of Directors directs Cabinet to advance age-based eligibility rules that was put out there just about an hour ago or so. And so what this will do and what it says in this is the Division I Cabinet to advance an age-based eligibility concept that, if adopted in its current form, would permit student-athletes up to 5 years of eligibility beginning the regular academic year after they turn 19 or graduate high school, whichever happens earlier. Under this model, Division I student-athletes would no longer be limited to only 4 seasons of competition within their 5-year eligibility window. It goes on to say that this would not be retroactive. Yeah. So the players that are graduating right now that just wrapped up their final season of eligibility would not fall under this umbrella of a 5th year, which sounds great, and I think that's the way you need to do it. But like David said, we've already seen all these types of legal battles between lawyers and the NCAA. This just has that written all over it.
Yeah, I get nervous whenever I hear that word adjudicated. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my God, that's a legal word. Yeah. What's being adjudicated today? But yeah, he's 100% right. But it reminds you of the COVID deal. I think when they made one of those rules, I don't want to speak out of term, I think the COVID year applied to the ones that graduated. Weren't they able to retro?
I think so,
yeah. Yeah, because some got a 5th year or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I think what happened is it'll get approved, or it'll pass or whatnot. And then once the legal deal gets into it, only the graduating class from this year. Can't go back 2 years. Mm-hmm. I think the class this year somehow legally will be allowed to. And that'll open up the floodgates for Penny, hopefully.
It's going to be weird because, you know,
that's the only right way to do it. 2 years ago was too far.
I mean, I get it. I just wish they would have waited to do this until a little bit later. Yeah.
Now this class is 2 years.
The seniors that are getting ready to, because the athletic calendar starts on August 1st. If you had said, okay, this is going into effect on August 1st, the seniors that are playing this season will have an additional year of eligibility, that 5th year. Okay. It starts now, because this is just going to be madness.
And the ones that are graduating, you're null and void. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I get you. But
you're drawing a line in the sand. That's basically what you're doing.
We'll talk more about this at 5:30 because this is big news coming down from the NCAA. But right now we need to get to another break. And when we return, we'll wrap up the NFL draft, give our final thoughts on everything that happened from Friday night through Saturday. We'll even get into some thoughts on what happened back in round one after we've had a couple more days to digest it. But we'll do all of that next on Sports Time.
Did you miss your favorite Sports 56 show?
No!
Check out the podcast, broken down hourly, at sports56whbq.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like and subscribe. Never miss any Sports 56 show again with our podcasts available daily from Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now, back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
And she says, I wish that I could be like the cool kids, because all the cool kids, they seem to fit in.
Welcome back into Sports Time. Bryant and Darian with you, and we got to wrap up the NFL draft. We talked a lot about round one on Friday. That was Thursday night. Then when we got out of here, we had rounds 2 and 3 Friday night, and then 4, 5, 6 on Saturday. A couple of big takeaways from the draft. We talked Jermaine McCoy with David, a guy that, you know, leading up to the draft, pretty much the sentiment around him was first round talent, but could fall to the second round because of that injury. He falls all the way to the fourth round. After that, here locally with the University of Memphis, Travis Burke was drafted in the fourth round to the Los Angeles Chargers. It's really cool. I saw that the front office, it was the general manager, the assistant general manager, and Jim Harbaugh did a press conference after the round three of the draft.
Love big tackles there.
And they're huge on their big men, on the big nasties up front. And they kind of said that they were kind of talking about all the potential that they see in Travis Burke. But the thing that stuck out to me was Jim Harbaugh. I don't know how many reporters were actually in the room, but there was one reporter that kind of just went through all the guys that were drafted and was like, tell me about this guy. And then they would all kind of give their thoughts on each of them. So they got to Travis Burke, and they asked him about Travis Burke, and the assistant general manager answered first, I believe. The general manager answered second, and then they got to Jim Harbaugh, and he was kind of talking about, you know, the size, different things about him. And then the thing that jumped out to me, he said, sometimes you get a favorite player, and this is definitely one of mine in this draft. So saying that Travis Burke is one of his favorite players out of this draft and out of the guys that they got in Los Angeles. So seems like he likes what the potential there and what Travis Burke could add. So I think a really good spot for Burke there in Los Angeles. And then I think the other big thing was the quarterbacks. We talked about that a little bit with David Cobb. You had the two quarterbacks taken in the first round, no quarterbacks taken in the second round. The third quarterback taken off the board was Carson Beck, taking number 65.
Who had great odds that you told us about.
Great odds to go in the second round. Then it was Drew Aller, who was taken by the Steelers at number 76. Cade Klubnik to the Jets in the fourth round. Cole Payton, the quarterback for North Dakota State, taken in the first round. Talen Green taken in the sixth round. The quarterback from Rutgers taken at 223 in the seventh round. Morton from Texas Tech taken in the seventh round. All those quarterbacks taken before Garrett Nussmeier finally taken off the board. You talked a ton. We both agreed about how much the potential you see at the next level. Obviously, injury concerns and a bad season last year at LSU. But for Garrett Nussmeier to be on the board until late in the seventh round, that was a surprise.
Couldn't have been size, maybe hand size.
I think we talked about this on Friday, and I don't know exactly what it was. So he was dealing with an oblique injury throughout the season.
Looks like he played with a flap jacket on, too.
Yeah, I think he did. So he's dealing with an oblique, and I think testing revealed that there's something, and I don't know exactly what it is. It's not like a tumor or growth or anything, but something is pressing against a nerve in his back.
Okay.
And that's what's causing the oblique injuries. And so the thought around the NFL is before he can even touch the field, he's going to need to deal with that. But they say it's a very minor surgery. He'll miss some time.
Minor and spine, doesn't go together.
Yeah, it doesn't really go great together. But, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of risk there, but maybe that's what it was, is teams were like, you know, this is a guy that, you know, you're not going to get much out of him early because of the injury and just, you know, the you need to work through some things with him. But, yeah, I mean, again, like, look, I didn't watch much Rutgers football, but I would have taken Garrett Nussmeier over him. I mean, just there's a handful of quarterbacks on here that I probably would have taken the idea of what Garrett Nussmeier could bring.
I mean, Drew Aller's coming off an ACL, right?
That's
Penn State? Yeah, he tore his knee up, right?
I think he did.
Yeah, and he got drafted before Nuss. Like,
and those two guys were linked forever.
Yeah, I think we just brought
Of kind of before they were supposed to be both the guys. They were kind of the first round quarterbacks that were supposed to be taken, and then as they fell, it was like, oh, these are two guys that could probably go day two. People will see the potential in them. And you see one go in the third round, and then the other not taken until the second round.
And like I said, don't cry for him. Some of the highest paid men in the world are backup quarterbacks who have that extended opportunities to back up a healthy QB. And that's where Nuss failed. Nuss failed to Kansas City, and long as Mahomes, keeps his health in tow, I think Nuss will make a lot of money backing him up. So my quick notes here, I'll go to Arizona. Yeah. Love is a game-changing player, but I'm very, very interested in what they saw in Carson Beck.
Landon's giving a big thumbs down over there.
Big thumbs down on. Yeah, we know why.
They stole our love.
We stole your love. They had the commercials and the banners just ready for you, right? I understand that. But yeah, just wondering what Arizona, what they saw in Carson Beck. Hopefully they saw a winner. I think he needs to put on a little bit of weight. But as far as what he's shown on the big stages, I think we can nod our heads and say, hey, it's worth a shot with Carson Beck, at least where they took him. Other big takeaways, again, I affectionately call Caleb Downs Darren Woodson. I honestly believe you guys have your defensive protector for the next 10 to 15 years back there, as long as health stays with him. A couple other small but really big, in my opinion, love getting Proctor for Malik Willis. He may not have anyone to throw the ball to, but he has a protector, a big brother in front of him that'll protect his blind side. And Tyson going to the Saints. I mean, Tyler Shuck is someone who stuck out to me towards the end of the year. He just played better and better and better. And you add Jordan Tyson, which we kind of talked about this Friday. He's a little bit injury prone. So you stick him across from Chris Olave, who's a little bit injury prone. But if that thing hits, with what the NFC South has going on, you know, got the little man in Carolina, what's happening in the left-handed quarterback room in Atlanta, Tampa Bay is Tampa Bay. I give New Orleans, and affectionate enough, well, crazy enough, they were actually, what, one game away from making the playoffs? Didn't they lose kind of down the stretch where they were playing really, really, really well? So I'm looking forward to what's going on in the Big Easy, man. It's been a while since you've heard some who that's going on. So really interesting what's going on there.
Yeah, they got some nice pieces that they've brought in, and you know, last year in the draft, this year in the draft, and so yeah, I mean, we'll see what ultimately.
Shuck was such a big question. I just think he answered the question that allowed them to take Jordan. I think that allowed them to take Jordan Tyson. Him just stepping up. So we're gonna see what happens with my man across the glass, his team. How is he going to utilize Carnell Tate? I think this year it will show if Cam Ward is a quarterback. Not necessarily the quarterback, maybe or maybe not for. I know he is the quarterback in Tennessee, but how do you use these weapons that the team has obviously gotten you, knowing that you have defensive coaches? They are betting on Cam instead of themselves. So
No, I think it's I think it's a good point. Landon, your thoughts on your Tennessee Titans? Anything you want to add?
They stole his love. That's all.
They did steal his love.
They did steal our love. I think overall it wasn't bad. If I were to give him a grade, I'd give him like a B plus, if I'm being generous. But I know we don't do pluses and minuses.
I've stopped doing grades.
Yeah, well, that was evident in your rant.
I'm just kidding.
But no, I think we addressed some of the problems. I was kind of surprised that kind of earlier in those what was it, late second round and third round, that we didn't jump on top of a offensive lineman quicker. I know that they picked up a few people. I know they picked up that I believe he was a tackle that's probably going to play a lot of guard in the NFL from Indiana. But not a lot of help there. I was kind of confused about getting Nick Singleton, the running back out of Penn State, when you already have as many running backs as you do. That just kind of felt like a space filler. He'll definitely play special teams, probably some preseason football. But, I mean, overall, I wasn't disappointed in anybody that they picked up. But I think my biggest question coming out of the other side, you're talking about all these quarterbacks that fell so late, a question to you two gentlemen, is with Diego Pavia. Diego Pavia not being drafted, not being signed anywhere, invited to the Ravens rookie minicamp, is the UFL going to be his destination?
That's the way. Did you hear David Cobb? The way David explains it, Grey Cup. Here we come.
Yeah, I think he's got a
UFL or UFL. I know the people at the UFL have already said that they would love to have him over, and I think he'd be a good fit.
Anyone but the NFL. Here we go.
I don't think so. I don't know. I really don't know how it looks. I think it's just whatever you want to do. But I know he's got a contract, or he's on the list with the CFL team with Winnipeg, so he's got the option to go to CFL and be on a team. I'm sure. I mean, there are plenty of UFL teams. The only problem with the UFL is I don't believe he would be eligible to immediately be picked up by a UFL team. Like, I think you'd have to wait until next year. So you'd probably go to the CFL this year and then potentially go to the UFL next spring.
Play your own football. Why not?
Sure. I mean,
were any UFL guys drafted? any UFL guys drafted?
No, you can't be drafted out of the UFL. You get signed.
Yeah, you can come
so
back.
So you sign as free agents.
Yeah.
They can sign
they can
as free
sign.
Agents.
Yeah, yeah, okay. They just can't get drafted. I mean, okay. You go to the UFL because you didn't get drafted. You're okay. Not on an NFL team. So it comes after. So, like, the UFL will have their draft, but it will be guys that were in this year's NFL draft that just wrapped up.
Okay.
They'll get drafted in, you know.
Kind of like the supplemental draft.
January or so, sure, yeah. And we'll be put on a
hey,
UFL
hey, we can get
team.
Our names called.
Sure, something like that.
Oh, Landon's name.
Some other kind of local angles of things that happened in the draft. Jake Golday, who played at Arlington, he was drafted in the second round by the Minnesota Vikings. Former Bartlett standout Justin Jefferson was selected by Cleveland in the NFL draft, and then former Briarcrest standout Kieron Crawford was drafted by Auburn. A handful of local guys were picked up as undrafted free agents. You had Bryson Eason, who was at Tennessee, and before that was at Whitehaven. He signed with San Francisco, so your 49ers get a big pickup. Lincoln Perry, who was at Houston, and then Arkansas State and Texas State. He signed with the Colts over the weekend. And then Auburn offensive lineman Isaven Miller was signed with the Cleveland Browns. He was at Wooddale in high school. So a couple of local guys getting signed for Memphis on the other side. I mentioned the signing of Travis Burke. Some other guys were picked up over the weekend. Cortez Braham, he has been signed as an undrafted free agent with Baltimore. And Greg Duosier, he's also going to Los Angeles to join the Chargers. So some Memphis guys getting opportunities at the next level. What, Duosier?
It's my all-team name. I love it. I love his name. I don't know. I just love his name.
It's really...
He said what?
And Hawaii.
What about Hawaii?
Their kicker, Kansei Matsuzawa.
Oh, good for them.
Oh, okay, all-name teams. Yeah, I love a good all-name team. That's all.
That is a good all-name team. Also, Jaden Flaker from Memphis, the linebacker. He signed with the Buffalo Bills. But that was the draft. A lot of fun over the weekend, and I think got a lot of people excited for football. And kind of the next couple of weeks, we'll get camp starting to open. And before we know it, it'll be August. We'll be talking preseason football
and
in the
49ers
NFL.
Will still be old, even after a draft.
I guess so.
This is crazy.
We need to get to another break. When we return, it'll be time for Big Number of the Day.
You have opinions?
I think it's over.
Of course you do.
I don't think it's that simple.
Everyone does.
I got all the answers.
Hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 360-8255. Back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Big Daddy.
Hello, Big Brand.
It's a guy, he wants to be big, then he gets big, he doesn't want to be big anymore, then he gets small, but the suit's too big.
Big Daddy.
The big boy.
You're a big guy.
I think she's trying to pull a fast one on Big Daddy.
The big number of the day.
All right, well, my big number today comes from the NBA. We talked about the weekend around the NBA playoffs earlier. We'll talk some more NBA in our next segment with DeMichael Cole. But this one comes from the Minnesota Timberwolves and their game Saturday night against the Denver Nuggets. The big story was Ayo Dosunmu, and that's where this number comes from. It is the big number 43. 43 is the amount of points that Ayo Dosunmu had in that game for the Timberwolves. And with that performance, Ayo Dosunmu became the first Timberwolves, Ayo Dosunmu is the first player, not just the first Timberwolf, the first player in NBA history with 40 or more points. He ended with 43, 75% field goal shooting. He was 13 for 17 from the field, 5 or more three-pointers without a miss. He was 5 for 5 from 3, and 10 or more free throws without a miss. He went 12 for 12 from the charity stripe. So 40-plus points, 75 or better field goal shooting, 5 or more threes without a miss, and 10 or more free throws without a miss in any game, regular season or playoffs, off the bench or as a starter. He is the first player in NBA history, in any NBA game, to have all of those numbers. Just a really remarkable performance from Ayo on Saturday night.
That is very good,
that's
dude.
That, like, I saw that. I was just scrolling through Twitter late Saturday night, and I saw that. I was like, I got to save that because that's perfect.
That is way more in-depth on the stat that I had on. It's not my big number, but the stat I had, he's the first player in 10 years to have 40 points off the bench. Last person to do that, Steph Curry. And I was like, wow. Steph Curry came off the bench in 2016. Why? I did not dive into it. I needed to go and see why. Was it an injury or something like that? But Steph, it had to be like a first. Yeah. But Steph was actually the last person to do that. my big number is, like I said, all encompassing today. The number is 4. It's representative of the sports weekend we had. Not only are the I'm going to adjudicate this by saying our Cardinals. I'm going to say my Dodgers because you and Brett won't let me live it down and I'm slick a Dodgers fan. So our Cardinals are on a 4-game losing streak. The Lakers blew an opportunity in game 4 in which I told you it will come back to bite them in the butt with a small chance that they have if they advance past the Rockets to play against the Thunder. And I look back at what the Tennessee Titans did at the number 4 pick with Carnell Tate. Wondering, you know, a defensive head coach betting on the offensive side of the ball. I really think that says a lot to the person and the player that Cam Ward is. In no way, shape, form, or fashion did my man across the glass or any of us not only see Carnell Tate going there, but none of us would have inked in an offensive player. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm kind of honing in on that number 4.
Well, I mean, running back.
Where's the running back? Yeah. There. I kind of thought Love would be gone, but if he wasn't, I get
gone,
it. Yeah.
Sure.
It's defensive, right? Defensive, okay, so you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So defense across the board. And finally, you get an opportunity for a sweep tonight. You get an opportunity for a redemption tonight. And then you get an opportunity for a 3-time MVP to show his face tonight, all in game 4. So loving on the number 4 as of right now. But Cardinals, shake that 4-game losing streak, please.
Yeah, that was a rough weekend. It was a weird weekend for the Cardinals. We talked some
Mariners put up some runs, man.
They did, which, I mean, good for them. They've needed that because the bats have not really been working in Seattle. But, you know, yesterday, 3-2 win for the Mariners. On Saturday was that game where it was just everybody was scoring runs, 11-9. How many home runs were in that game? That game was insane with the amount of home runs. Julio Rodriguez had 2 home runs. No, he had a home run. Wilson had a home run. Young had a home run, all for Seattle. And then Weatherholt had a home run. Herrera had a home run. Church had 2 home runs. Church has been hitting the ball extremely well right now. And Pajes had a home run. So it felt like everybody was hitting home runs in that game on Saturday. And then Friday was also a loss for the St. Louis Cardinals. Final score, 3-2 in that game. So you had 2 3-2 games in the crazy one. So, yeah, all of them were pretty close. Cardinals had an opportunity to win, you know, all 3 of those games. But on the losing end of 3 of them. So, like you said, now a little bit of a losing streak. And they'll get a series started tonight against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And we'll see if maybe they can turn things around on the road. But we need to wrap up this second hour, get to another break. When we return, we're talking the Grizzlies and the NBA. DeMichael Cole from the Commercial Appeal, he joins us next.